At least 57 people this week have died trying to reach the Spanish enclave of Ceuta as 50,000 migrants enter the tiny territory from Morocco. Spain's Prime Minister, Pedro Sanchez, has called it a, quote, violation of Spain's territorial integrity and attributed the mass crossing to, quote, human trafficking mafias that had taken advantage of a decision by Spain's Supreme Court, which recently ruled that those intercepted at sea while trying to enter Ceuta or Spain's northern African enclave of Melilla could not be returned under special rules. Speaking to The Guardian, Rashid Sibi, who leads a local workers' association representing officers of the Spanish Guardia Civil, which patrols Spain's borders, described the situation as a serious humanitarian crisis. Without shelter, thousands of people, including unaccompanied children, had been left sleeping in parks and on pavements while others roamed the streets aimlessly. It's chaotic, said Sibi. Among those who died, many drowned, but some were killed in a crush to cross the breakwater fence at Tarajal Beach.
Oh, that's horrendous. And in fact, there's a film on at the a Scandinavian Film Festival right at this moment called on exactly this topic with well-off Nordic people going for holidays down in Spain and being confronted by the arrival of people fleeing from Africa. I wonder if what's going on at the moment, besides the horror of it, has something to do with the reporting famine or lack of food that is happening in in West Sahara at the moment. This has come to light considering the recent Ulysses, the Odyssey film that's just come out, some of it was shot in Western Sahara, mm-hmm. and this is at the same time as the human rights abuses that are going on in Western Sahara, as well as apparently food shortages. I wonder if, you know, of course, the background to that is, of course, the Moroccans just walked down into Western Sahara and stole the land from the locals and then have set up concentration camp-like prisons to contain political dissent.
Mm-hmm. Matthew, you said there was some contestation about what was actually causing this.
Well, there's been a bit of chatter online or like on various social media outlets. There's like, it seems like the initial, well, there's footage that seems to indicate that there were Moroccan security that were allowing people to leave. So yeah, there's a bit of contention around the, how was it that about 49,500 Moroccans just left en masse.
And I think
across the border to
so applying pressure to the Spanish, who have been quite loudly in support of the Palestinians and anti-American.
Yeah, and that's some of the background
chatter.
Background chatter, in particular, Morocco is one of the parties to the so-called Abraham Accords, that like along with a number of other Arab states around that will cooperate with Israel.
I think also putting into perspective the scale of this crisis, Ceuta has a population of 86,000 people, and this morning there have been additional reports that potentially 10,000 people above and beyond the 50,000 that had been reported have actually tried to enter. So you've got 60,000 people entering a territory that has a population of 86,000 people. So the community has just been completely overwhelmed with people. Aside from the humanitarian concerns about it, it's just a complete collapse of the systems in Ceuta being able to accommodate having this many people in the territory. So
extraordinary.
Yeah, interesting to keep an eye on in the coming week.
We've got a more local refugee issue. Nauru refugees and asylum seekers face humanitarian crisis. This is from the Refugee Action Coalition. A group of 39 Bangladeshi asylum seekers have written to the Department of Home Affairs and the Commonwealth Ombudsman urging the Australian government to act urgently to address the humanitarian crisis they are facing on Nauru. Urgent action is needed to deal with food shortages, the lack of safe drinking water, electricity blackouts, and their uncertain future after 2.5 years on Nauru. One of their demands is for an immediate improvement in our daily allowance, access to safe drinking water, and a stable electricity. Detainees only get a pittance of $260 a fortnight, not enough to buy sufficient food. A 2 dozen box of 300ml bottled water sells for $18. Rice is unavailable on Nauru at the moment. Many detainees are surviving on one meal a day. The 39 signatories are among over 100 asylum seekers sent to Nauru after arriving and requesting protection in Australia. The crisis also affects the 12 refugees who have been deported from Australia to Nauru under draconian legislation introduced by the Labor government in 2025 following the High Court outlawing indefinite detention in Australia. The rainwater tanks at the Ia camp ran dry on the 26th of July, but Nauru authorities will only fill the tank once a month, which is not due until tomorrow, August the 2nd. Nauru authorities are demanding $38 to provide 4,000 litres of water before the 2nd of August. There are real concerns about the safety of the drinking water from the rain tanks. Among the concerns is that phosphate dust from local mining is washed into the tanks when it rains. Many of the detainees report stomach complaints after consuming the water and the development of kidney stones after prolonged exposure. The humanitarian crisis on Nauru is the inevitable result of Labor's commitment to offshore detention, said Ian Ringgold, spokesperson for the Refugee Action Coalition. That's just outrageous.
Shocking. And I'd have everyone be reminded that for the 2025-26 financial year, the Australian government spent $9.6 million per person in offshore detention. What is that money being used for if not to... Yeah. Feed
and that comes
these
to
people.
And I'm just looking at a Guardian article just yesterday, and that equates to $971.6 million that the Australian government has spent.
So where's it going?
Where's it going? Exactly.
Please explain.
And the same article says that the people who are on, unfortunately, on Nauru are given a $260 fortnightly payment. They're given the Australian government pays people on Nauru $260 payment a fortnight, which is meant to cover all their living expenses. But as an example, the minimum 28 gig monthly data plan with Nauru's main internet mobile provider cost $112.
Oh my God!
So that equates to about 20% of the allowance.
And of course, this is what connects people to the world. This is what is their only connection to the outside world. It's obviously the too hard basket for an Australian government to actually govern. They're much more interested in making deals with dictators from all around the world instead of actually dealing with their own backyard. The Victorian government, lots of things have been happening in Victoria government land.
Yeah, this is the big news closer to home this week. There's been a leadership
spill. Yeah.
So Premier Jacinta Allen has stepped down, or I should say former Premier Jacinta Allen has stepped down this week. She's been replaced by Ben Carroll, who was formerly her deputy. And Carroll is from the right faction of Victorian Labor. So there's been some chattering, for instance, at the ABC about it being kind of a bit of a final blow for the socialist left within the Victorian Labor Party.
The socialist left in the Labor Party.
So who knows how true that is.
Is that a suit that they put in mourning?
Well, it's been really interesting reading. I didn't realise...
you mean there's worse to come?
Yes. I didn't realise that Jacinta Allen had so much family that had been so actively involved in the labor union movements. So that's been one of the interesting bits of coverage this week after she's left office, her long ties to the Labor Party and also particularly the Education Teachers Unit. So it's very...
The AEU would find that interesting.
But I think it's a good lesson in not taking for granted that just because someone has family in the union and has been a supporter of unions, that they're actually going to be on the side of workers, because she's had an abysmal record when it's come to, for instance, protections around things like AI and being proactive about regulating international investment and things like that. So I don't know. I thought it was interesting to do a bit of a retrospective of her career this week. I'm not sure I was very impressed. She did do some amazing things around women's health. I don't think that could be denied. But Ben Carroll, I don't think is going to be too much of a break with her legacy when it comes to being a very pro-big business premier and also being quote-unquote tough on crime.
Really what you're saying is it really emphasises the level of power that is being expressed and influence that is expressed by big business and outside elements on our democracy. If that's where her core political upbringing comes from and the results that we're seeing, I think it's really just a wake-up call.
I think also it's important to say that this is definitely to do with the upcoming election 4 months from now. Labor is clearly very worried about the challenge from One Nation. So there's been some polling from Victorian Trades Hall. One Nation potentially could secure 36 seats, God forbid. Hopefully that's an overestimation, but I think if there's anything we've learned from what's going on in America, you should not be complacent.
Well, it's fascinating because, of course, those 36 seats, I'm jumping to a conclusion, but generally speaking, then none of these people have any real understanding of the mechanics of running a government. So therefore, it will be a very... either the whole democracy will be watered down because of their incompetence, let alone their ideological standpoint. If people think that by voting for them that they're going to get a better result, I think that they really probably are living in la-la land.
I think that there's definitely been some signalling from the Labor Party and the Premier that there's going to be this kind of like move away from Allan's premiership and Dan Andrews in particular. They're trying to position themselves as an alternative, and a big part of that was calling a royal commission into alleged corruption in the building and construction industry.
Which leads one to believe that they're going to, the only people that they could now be doing an inspection on is government and collusion with big business. But I'm assuming that's not what are going to be the frame of reference.
I don't think so.
Before we move on, there's a couple of things. One is that the Victorian government, of course, when all these big things happen, other little things, but not little for some people, community legal centres put up a red flag this week saying that the Victorian government is attempting to override Human Rights Charter in the name of operational considerations, which probably means that they're short-staffed at prisons, because that might be the code for that. No Air in Prison Bill, which is set to be introduced in the Legislative Assembly in this sitting. It's a piece of legislation as a response to a recent Supreme Court judgment which found that depriving a prisoner of 1 hour per day in the open air breached both the Corrections Act 1986 Victoria and the state's Charter of Human Rights and Responsibilities. The No Air in Prison Bill seeks to remove the legal requirement to provide access to fresh air, instead leaving it subject to operational considerations, in inverted commas, at correctional facilities. That is gobsmacking.
It's awful.
That is just outrageous.
Like the most basic human right.
Yeah. Fresh air.